Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Right, so I have made you. Actually, you requested it in this place.
I did.
She said, well, in a sort of route, she said, I've never had your honey baked chicken. It was like one of the first things that I was cooking for lots of people. Me and Nana used to make this for everybody for decades, like bands, children, families, husbands, everybody. So this is like, it's one of the cornerstone recipes of our family, essentially. Green seasoning, seasoned chicken, and then the mistake people always make with honey baked chicken is they put the honey on before it's cooked, and then it gets really burnt. You have to put the honey on at the end, so you cook it, and then just before it's finished, the last 8 minutes, you take it out, because drizzle the honey on, then put it in really high, and then you get sexy.
Then you get sexy.
That's what makes it sexy.
Right? Yes,
thank you.
Okay. And you know what?
It's bloody good on a hangover.
This is literally the best hangover.
They tested it out for 20 years, didn't you?
Yes. Welcome to our home. Who have you brought?
I have brought my beloved husband, Justin Bassini.
Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
And partly because Andy and Justin have never met, and we always find it so crazy that you've never met, and we've kept trying to do it, and finally we get to do it and record the outcome.
Yes, exactly.
Which
is how we like to do everything.
Not like normal people.
Justin, chicken.
Just go to the pub.
Don't be getting
exactly.
There, no cheeks. Well, one piece or two pieces.
Can I ask you about your surname?
Bassini, Italiano?
Italian, yeah. So my grandparents were Italian on my father's side. Mm. And they came over, my grandfather came over in 1910 when he was 11 years old to South Wales. And wow. They ran fish and chip shops and ice cream parlours and cafes.
Yeah, yeah, isn't that... Like,
this is a thing, isn't it?
It's a total thing.
It's South Wales Italians, basically. Yeah. Sidoli ice cream and all of that comes from there.
It's so crazy, isn't it? That mix.
The village that your family is from is also the village that Angela Hartnett's family.
Oh, right. Is
yes.
It?
Yes.
Yeah, so her grandmother was also from Bardi, which is outside Parma in the north of Italy. And so the food that she makes, brats, pasta, tortellini, all of that sort of stuff. That's the same food that I was brought up on.
That you grew up eating, so you recognise it. I love Angela Hartnett. She's one of my favourite cooks. She's such a... She's also one of my favourite people.
Yeah.
She's just brilliant. So, how did you two meet?
We met on Hinge,
the dating app.
Justin and I have both been married before. And I went through a phase of dating as a single woman in my late 30s, which was a bit of a nightmare. And I got to the stage where I was like, I'm done with the apps. I'm just going to go and do a lifelong yoga retreat forever. And get a cat.
That sounds sexy.
And then someone told me about Hinge, and I was like, okay, well, I'll give it a go. And the first and only person I matched with was Justin.
Wow.
But because I was in that phase, so I was like, I'm just not interested, I'm going to move to LA, and I'd booked tickets to move there full time. I had such low expectations the actual date that we went on. And then I walked in, and there was this distractingly handsome man who had not put the most flattering photos of himself on the app. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's immediate chemistry. And because I was so sort of unsettled and disarmed by it, I sat down. It was this big open plan bar in a very fancy London hotel. And it had been raining outside, so I had to take my raincoat off and I had to take my bag off and I had to put my umbrella to one side. And as I was doing it, the seat that I was in wobbled fatally so that I got flung across the floor of this massive open plan bar, literally within 5 minutes of having met this very handsome man. And it was the most embarrassing moment of my life.
Oh my God.
It was awful. And I remember thinking to myself, there's only one way through this, which is to pretend it hasn't happened.
Style it out.
Yeah, just to style it out. And so Justin rushed round to help me up and was like, oh my goodness, are you all right? Are you all right? And then neither of us mentioned it for the entirety of the rest of the day until I got up and went to the toilet and Justin was like, don't fall over. I was like, he's a keeper. That's how we met.
When you thought it was safe to go back in the water.
I know.
Careful there, babe.
And what was what did you think when you met her, Justin? Were you immediately smitten? Were you smitten?
Yes. So I sort of... I knew very early that I thought I would like Elizabeth because obviously I knew a bit, like we started chatting before we met.
Yes, on WhatsApp.
On WhatsApp and things.
Was she famous already?
Yes.
No,
I had launched the podcast.
Also, I'm not famous, but I hadn't launched the podcast. So I'd written some books.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I knew something would happen because I made a note and I still have it in my phone, which is like Elizabeth Day notes, weird. And the reason I put it there was I was like, I think this is going to be like a really big relationship in my life. And so I started taking notes of like when our first date was, when our first kiss was, her parents' names, you know, all of this sort of stuff. Because I thought this will be really great history if this goes really, you know, the way I think it and hope it does. And it did.
And what was that feeling, the feeling of knowing that it was something? Because, you know, did it kind of feel like it was bigger than controlling it into something smaller?
Yeah, I thought there was an immediate connection, and that was really great because I'd done quite a lot of online dating after my divorce, and so you just get into this pattern of like going to see people, and I like meeting people, and so you go for a date, and I never really had terrible dates or anything, but obviously you sort of like, oh, I've got to do another one, got to do another one, and I think as Elizabeth said, she was at the end of a cycle, I was at the end of a cycle, and we were like, okay, you know, if this doesn't happen, I was going to take a break. And then suddenly Elizabeth comes into my life.
So I'm always really interested in whether people classify themselves as introverts or extroverts, because I think I'm an introvert who's learned how to be extrovert when I need to. But the reason that I can also cope with like being in front of an audience, I think you've totally nailed it. It's that you're not getting a lot back. So you don't have to take on the individual energy of one other person in quite an intense environment. And actually to replenish my energy sources, I need time on my own.
Yeah. I need quite a lot of time on my own. As I've discovered, as I've got older, I need more time on my own.
Yeah.
But there's something really important about turning your brain off. When your life is spent in these, you know, quite intense exchanges, and, you know, you do so much work with empathy and talking, and, you know, a lot of the things that I do are based around that. And I think anybody who's interviewing anybody, actually, a lot, you have to be empathetic, don't you? Because you have to work out how to read what's happening there and then in that moment.
I wanted to ask, what did you think of what Elizabeth did for work? And also, I suppose, when you met, Out of Fear was just rising. And, you know,
I hadn't even started it.
Oh, God, you hadn't even
started it. So we met in March 2018, and How to Fail launched in July 2018. Wow. So I've had the idea.
What a year.
What a year, exactly. So, yeah, but this is a fascinating question. I'm really interested to hear what Justin will... Thanks.
Well, I sort of saw it.
Couples counseling.
Great. Sorry. Yeah, so I didn't... I just thought you were a journalist and a novelist, right?
Which I was, yeah.
And so that was very attractive to me. You know, I like reading books and I like that whole sort of people who can create that sort of thing. And so that was good. So I didn't factor in a sort of the celebrity or the, you know, media type stuff, really. Mm. That's all come since we got together, really.
And how's that been?
It's fine. I mean, I don't like it when Elizabeth's recognised. I mean, we're out for dinner and somebody will come up, which happens more and more frequently.
Yeah.
And I sort of just sit there and let Elizabeth deal with it, because you like it.
I actually do.
Really?
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Interesting.
But I find it a bit intrusive.
Mm. So you like it?
I like it for the same reason I think that Andy does, in that I feel so grateful for it because my first few novels, barely anyone read. And I remember going and doing book events and I was one of a panel of four and there were four people in the audience. So it was a one-to-one ratio. And I remember the feeling of that and the mortification of it and the feeling of not being seen, I guess. Whereas what I do now with the podcast and with my books, I feel like that is me. And I think that's one of the blessings that life has given me, is that I now feel able to be my authentic self professionally and personally. Right. So if someone comes up to me and says, I listened to your podcast and it really helped me through a bad time, or I feel like I know you because I read your book, I'm like, yeah, you actually do, because I'm showing up as myself. But that's only because I was in my late 30s when it happened. So I did know myself better. Mm. And I think it's just that thing of like being, I'm so grateful for it. And it's, I have to say, it's not like I'm, you know, Beyonce. It's like a really sustainable,
manageable.
Yeah, yeah. It's not overwhelming at all.
No. And people are generally so nice.
Yeah. Nobody's been not nice.
Not to my face.
I'm like,
no.
Why, you know, everybody's being nice to you. They're telling you you're great. It's yeah. Like, that's nice.
I'm very needy, ultimately.
Yeah, so am I. Yeah.
Words of affirmation is my love language. So I'm like, yeah, just give them like, all to me. Yeah.
This is great. So do you think it takes its toll on her, Justin, the work that she does? Because you do give a lot. When we did the live How to Fail at the South Bank, I was really struck by how much your audience expected from you, like emotionally, like to solve for them, actually. Like they really think, do you feel like you have all the answers to so many things? And you do have a lot of answers to lots of things, but it's quite a lot.
Yeah.
It's quite a responsibility and you take it very seriously, so you give a lot back. Do you think that takes a toll on her?
Yeah, it does. And you are very often, you know, drained by that. Mm. I can sort of see that perform. But I mean, I've never been part of this one. I would imagine it's the same for every performer. You're sort of like giving energy out to the audience. Mm. And that's draining your battery. And then you need to go and sort of recoup that battery, recoup that energy. Yeah. And I see that in you.
Yeah.
And also the social media aspect of it means that it never switches off. Well, you know, you could be on the whole time. Mm. You've got to control it. And I think you've got better over the years. Mm. And I think because I don't use social media, and I didn't like it during, you know, when I was getting divorced, it was just awful going on Facebook, you know, because it is this thing of like everybody projecting their best selves and an amazing life and da da da. And when you're going through a difficult time, you're sort of like, oh, I'm crap, and everybody's fantastic,
right?
And I just was like, this is just negative.
It's like you don't need the lie,
right? And so I basically just cut it out at that stage. But you know, for you who uses it so much to connect, it can be just ongoing all the time.
I think I have got a lot better at it, and Justin has helped me get a lot better at
that. Is he your battery charger?
Yes, genuinely. Aww. I mean, I don't rely on him for that because I'm capable of doing it myself, but he is just, I think I realised, and it took me a very long time, for me, true love is feeling safe. It's that simple. And I think for so many years, I'd made the mistake of thinking, well, if someone says amazing things and it feels like fireworks, all of which I had with Justin, but then that's a testament to the kind of love, passionate love affair that we have. And actually, so much of the time, I was dating narcissists and fuckwits who never followed through with actions. And Justin makes me feel totally safe because he's never let me down, because there's a consistency to what you say and then you following up with what you do.
But that was difficult in the early stages.
It was very difficult. I found it very difficult that he wasn't as communicative as I had expected someone I was dating to be. So we had three major conversations about the fact that in my eyes, I felt like he didn't text me enough.
Totally get it.
Do you think he? Totally, I was just get like, it. And also because I think I'd had some quite negative dating experiences where if someone didn't text you, it meant that they were just about to fall out of your life.
And this is it, exactly. It's like you're being traumatised by texting, meaning that everything's still going well and everything's still safe. Right. That's where the safety came from. They text me. They let me know they're thinking, do you know what I mean? That's not the safety. That's just the narcissism.
I preach. Totally. And we had to have these conversations where I was like, this is how it feels when I don't hear from you. And Justin had to explain, well, text for me is like a really cheap form of communication. I'd much rather see you or talk to you on the phone. Right. I was like, what? I don't want to talk on the phone.
You don't
tell me I'm wicked.
I hate phone calls, but I love them with you. It's fine now. But yes, that was quite... And also, because of what we've both been through historically, and because you have three kids, and therefore there was a seriousness of intent to our dating, where we had to be really cautious in taking that next step. I hope you don't mind me saying, but it took us 6 months to say that we loved each other. But
is that a long time?
It felt like a really long time to me. Yeah.
See, me and Liz, I'm like, oh, totally. A month, I love you.
Yes.
But if it's real love, you probably do need us.
I think
that's a long time.
That's the point. You know, if you're trying to form a relationship that hopefully will go for decades, you know, taking your time to actually make sure that the foundation is there. And, you know, and I think, like, we're going to be together forever. So our relationship will probably be like 40, 50 years. And so that when you look at it and go, oh, it took us 6 months to say we loved each other. And then that stayed for 40 years.
Yeah, that's not really that long. That,
it doesn't sound that long, right?
So ratios.
I think pacing is very important.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'd rather somebody waited to say that they loved me than say it and they don't really mean it
saying. Now I agree with you. But at the time, I was like, just love them. Well, it's because
just emotionally gaslight me.
Because that's what I'm used to. Because it's what you know. Oh my God, this is revelatory.
Yeah. That's it.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I wanted to talk to you about motherhood and fertility, if you are okay with talking about all that.
I'm totally fine with it. Okay with it?
Yeah. Because, I go straight to the woman, but absolutely it's like it's a shared experience and journey, and people already would immediately say, how has this been, you know, for you? Yeah. I know you guys have been on a whole journey with it, and I've just turned 39, and I was like, God, isn't it interesting how quickly the door opens and how quickly the door starts to close?
Yeah.
For me, I felt like the door for having kids, because I'd worked my whole life, really 32. I was like, oh, I should probably think about that soon. Suddenly I'm 39, you're like, what? And I'm honestly, I just do not feel ready to have a baby, but there's a bigger reason that I feel I should, which is probably just physically and also the world. Mm. And I have started to, like, very recently and very severely started to feel shame about it.
Wow.
And it's just interesting how quickly it happens. How quickly
you feel shame over not having.
Yeah. Like not having kids.
Yes.
And possibly not having some for a few years. I feel like I just feel this new blanket of something else coming. Is that a great another thing to feel shame for?
Is that your internal narrative saying you're self-indulgent? You're not being...
No, it's more like things don't look how they should.
Okay.
I think it's right. Like,
and we live in a world where there are so many pictures and constructs that tell us this is what this is meant. This is what your body's meant to look like.
Yeah.
This is what your family's meant to look like. This is what your work is meant to look like. And it's amazing you're not on social media, actually. It's brilliant. Because that entire universe is built... I mean, I quite enjoy it, but there is a facet of it where I realise it's built to make you feel like you're just not doing enough, ever.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ever. Absolutely. It's never enough. How you're a mother isn't enough. If you're a mother isn't enough. How, you know, whether
your tablescaping is.
How your tablescaping.
Tablescaping, don't even start me.
She doesn't...
We've got a whole other industry.
We're actually not allowed to say it on this podcast. It has to be actually laying the fucking table.
It drives what is tablescaping?
Exactly.
See, and basically, that's because you're not on social media.
It's not a thing, Justin. It's a bollocks thing.
Instagram invented it for laying the table.
Laying the table is now called tablescaping.
And you pay sort of hundreds of pounds to get pre-made tablescapes. You know, at Christmas...
What?
At Christmas, you pay like hundreds of pounds to... various posh white women to
come and bring some design, flowers around.
Yeah, to design some a doilies. Tablescape with, you know, a very a perfect sort of chintzy floral.
Oh my God, I feel sick.
And a perfect like reindeer candlestick for Christmas.
I actually feel sick.
I felt sick when I looked into it, but I fell into it. Oh, I was like, I must be tablescaping. Because Justin does basically all of the cooking. He's an amazing cook.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm like, I feel, what can I contribute? And we were having everyone round to ours for Christmas last year. And I was like, yeah, what I can do, I'll lay the table and take a picture of it for Instagram. Because that's really, really
well,
helpful.
Fine. Well, fine.
I fell into it. And I was like, well, I refuse to pay hundreds of pounds to some woman in Sussex to send me the reindeer candle. And I just bought a load of stuff from Amazon and Zara Home.
How did this table look in the end, Justin? I'm going to ask you.
It looks quite nice.
Have you got pictures?
Just look like a nice table.
Yeah, I didn't
table.
Post
it's just,
yeah,
it's like, just, it it's nice just laying the table.
It's just laying the table.
No, but there's, I mean, but there's even ridiculous. Pressure about that.
Justin, I know, that's Justin, ridiculous.
Justin was unaware of the tablescaping.
Yeah, so it's a whole universe. But like the first time I saw a picture on Instagram that said, our Easter table. And I thought, as
well, like,
for a start, I hate Easter because it won't stand still. Who knows when it fucking is?
Yeah. So
when they go, Easter's late this year, I'm like, well, when is it meant to be? I don't understand what you're talking about. Shut up about fucking Easter. I suddenly realised there was like a whole pressure for people to get the Easter table. I'm like, nobody cared about Easter. No one cared about Halloween.
Yeah. Oh, I hate Guy Fawkes. That Halloween's become Halloween. A massive thing.
I know.
I hate it so much. Come on.
I'm literally the Halloween Grinch.
I hate fancy dress. Me too. So I'm like, I don't want to... Yeah.
So I've got a question for you. So what does family mean to you? When you think of family, are you a big... Like, I'm a very big... Well, not just believer in, but I'm a big haver of a massively extended family.
Yeah.
Whether they're blood... or not, the people that I love, the people that I care about. You know, there's a vast tribe of us. Is your life like that?
That's a really interesting question. And I guess it goes back, for me anyway, to what Makita was asking me about motherhood, in that I don't have my own biological children. And the reason I'm saying I is because it predates my meeting Justin. Mm-hmm. So I was already trying before we got together. And I've been trying for 12 years.
That's
and
a
I've
long
just,
time.
It's been such a long time and it does feel like a battle and it's worn me down, and I'm glad that I did it because I don't want to live a life without regret, but it was sucking up so much of my energy that we just made the decision, I made the decision to let it go at the beginning of this year, and I actually feel really at peace with that now. But it's meant that I've had to rethink what family means to me, because although I'm very lucky that I have my parents are still around and my sister, actually family for me means something much more encompassing and chosen. So my friends are really important to me.
Mm. Yes.
As my chosen family. And my friends' children. So I have 13 godchildren. And
I have three.
They're really important to me as well. And we're actually just talking about having a holiday in the summer where we'll invite lots of people. It's the first time that we've done that.
At different
we're
just times.
We're going to hire a villa, yes, and invite. And
not
just
all
the three kids.
Time.
Not all at the same time.
Vibe, where are you going to go?
Bali.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Wow. But I'm really looking forward to that. I think that's family... means that to me. It's like there's a chosen element to it that's really important to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, because things, I have a very, or we have a massive blood family as well. I've got like 120 cousins or something insane, right? I actually don't know how many there are. That's how many there are. And some of them I like, some of them I don't. Do you know what I mean? So being related to someone by blood is no guarantee of connection. So what I mean is, like, you can be forced together with people, or you can be related to them by blood, and it doesn't mean that it's family. It's like the connections you make are so important, like the connection that we had immediately.
Yes, 100%.
I'm like sister in vibes.
Yes,
and it's not always
like
that with people. You can make friends with people,
yeah,
but then there's a deeper thing that happens with some people.
Yes,
know?
And that's why, you know, all of my mum's female and male friends, that's Uncle Nick, that's Auntie Nana. And a lot of people would question me about it and say, was that like a black thing? And I was like, absolutely not.
Can I be your Auntie Elizabeth?
Right, absolutely. Auntie Elizabeth. Actually, You're a little too young. We're too close in age.
Cousin.
Cousin. You're more cousin. She called you Liz earlier.
I did. That's why. No, it's fine.
Completely by mistake.
You probably know people from my university era and they all call me Liz.
Unless
I've invited it. I don't want you to call me Liz. Like, you're fine calling me Liz.
Right.
Because you know Rick Edwards and they all knew me as like Liz.
Oh,
and
yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, you're Rick's
crew. So don't worry about it.
Okay, cool. Was it working together where you and Elizabeth first met, Mum?
It was the book show.
Yeah. Oh, right.
We met on set.
We did.
We didn't even meet before. There was no meetings before. There was no set. I was like, you're doing
we
the
had
show.
A Zoom call before.
Oh, did we? Oh, we once, had a weird
yes,
Zoom.
It was a weird Zoom. But the setup was so wild because I had never presented TV before, let alone live TV. And suddenly this job felt like fell in my lap. And it was the Sky Arts Book Club Live at that mm-hmm. stage. And it was during a lockdown. But because we were journalistic, we got to be key workers.
That
so
was
we got
it.
To go to work. And so I was really grateful that I got to get out of the house for 2 hours every Sunday evening. And I met Andy in person on set, and Andy could not have been more generous or more lovely or supportive.
She had her earpiece in backwards.
I did. Well, the first time I didn't even wear an earpiece.
Oh, wow.
And the second time I had it in backwards. And honestly, because it must have been actually probably, it could have been quite annoying for you.
Like, no, not
I've at got all. This complete novice who's sitting next to me, I've never met before, and we're going to shoot 2 hours of live TV together. And it was just so amazing, and you were so wonderful to me.
Because of the way our world's yes. media has expanded,
yes.
there are loads of people who do interviews and interviewing who don't really know how to do it, and it's quite tiring.
Because it's not
and
their background. They yeah, become famous in a different way.
In a yeah. different way, through a different yeah. route. So then when they have to interview you,
yeah.
you know, I met somebody interviewed me the other day, they asked me the same two questions 6 times and I just gave them 6 different answers. I've developed a way of interviewing myself when I have to.
Yes.
But it can be a bit tiring sometimes. So I was really glad in a live TV situation that my new co-presenter was smart and funny and knew what she was talking about. I was like,
thank
oh,
you.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, I've learned so much from you, professionally speaking.
Have you?
But, oh, yeah. You sound surprised.
I am.
Yeah, just in terms of how warm and how yourself you are when I always remember, so the format of that program was there was a real life book group and then there were authors that came in and the book group would have read their books and we all got a chance to ask questions, but you were always so amazing at setting quite nervous people at ease
right.
who were in the book group who'd never been on TV before, and you were always just you have that Lorraine Kelly thing where you make everything seem like an easy chat but actually you're doing an enormous amount of work to make it seem
to
that
make
easy.
It seem like an easy chat,
so yeah mm. so I learned a lot from you, but the biggest gift is our friendship, and
yeah.
I just love and adore you and long may it continue.
It's one of the reasons we wanted to do this podcast, because this is how our family has expanded in the way it has: dinner around the table and bringing people together, and then they bring someone they love and then you love them, and then they bring someone they love and then you see them. I mean, that's genuinely how our family grew, around a table with Mum's chicken. So,
yeah,
kind so of. Welcome to the family is
thank
what I meant
you.
To say. Like the mafia,
thanks,
you're in now.
Cousin Makita.
Ah.
I found that conversation that you two had on How to Fail so interesting. The other thing you were talking about was entrepreneurship.
Mm.
And I really like the way that you kind of quantified it, actually. And it's quite a gutsy thing, isn't it, really,
yeah.
to keep putting yourself on the line. And, you know, we live in a world where we have a government who are actively undervaluing people in the arts and creativity. But when I was listening to you, I was thinking, most artistic people are, in fact, entrepreneurs, right?
Because great point.
We
that
are
good,
our
you
own
said that to me
business,
recently.
Aren't we? We
yeah.
are
yeah.
our own business.
And are, in fact, kind of starting, you know, you're on your own.
And, it's, and
yes.
it's gutsy to be an artistic, creative person.
Yeah, especially when you're exactly a one-man band, or yeah. you're essentially sole traders, trading yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And that is very, requires a lot of guts and a lot of resilience. And I see that with you. You know, you've got to keep going and keep producing the work. There was a great quote that I heard a few years ago, which is great artists ship, right? So what that means is great artists actually do the work. They don't sit there just, you know,
ship with a
polishing the novel for the 20th time, you know, doing the 400th re-edit of your book or whatever.
Yeah.
You've got to get it out there. And that process of getting out there is all about putting yourself out there and putting your work out there to be judged.
Yeah.
And if it's successful, it could not be successful, right? And so the successful entrepreneur, you put your work out there, hopefully people like it, and you make some money from it.
And if they don't, you get back up again.
And that's, you get
the
back
thing
up.
Is that you have to keep getting back
exactly.
up. You're someone who's got back up again.
Yeah, so I've had several businesses, and the business in my 20s didn't go well. And yeah, it was pretty painful when that failed.
Yeah, is that because it meant a lot to you, or was it just embarrassing?
It was embarrassing. Mm. It was shame, mm. But it was the first time that I'd really failed at something. But this was the first time where I was like, I've really fucked up here. Mm-hmm. I've really failed. And that internalization of, no, you've really failed here, was very difficult to take.
Yeah, it's hard to know. That it's a phase of something, isn't it?
Gosh. Yeah, when you're in it.
When you're really in the middle of something that is like just falling down around your ears, it's hard to know. You just think it's the end.
Yeah. Well, you don't know the bit that's coming, which is, oh God, I'm going to have to find all this strength to start again.
Just start again.
I think some of that pain is knowing that that is somewhere in the future. I remember thinking, not even bankruptcy, just sort of like suddenly not really working in my early 30s. And I was like, oh, right, I'm going to come back. It's just not now. This is about something else.
That was such a good point. I remember feeling that in a personal relationship sense. So I was dumped 3 weeks before my 39th birthday.
I hate that story.
It was horrendous.
Now I turn 39, I'm like, oh, I get it. Bad timing.
Yeah, but no, my 30s, I had got married to the wrong person and divorced. I tried and failed to have children. And then I got into this new relationship that ended totally out of the blue for me just before my 39th birthday. And I remember exactly what you said. Part of the pain, the substantial pain being like, I'm going to have to now spend time trying to find someone and build up a relationship again and build up to loving someone again and taking the risk again. And it just felt so overwhelming. I was like, I'm going to be 83 by the time that happens.
Yeah,
by the
time
I've like found enough trust in someone again.
And the strength to stand up. And,
yes. But then I found Justin and he made me realise, as you said earlier, you're a great believer in pacing, and sometimes the pacing that life has in store for you is totally different from what you're projecting and what you think it's going to be.
This is it. It's like surrender and let the universe get on with it.
That's absolutely so right.
We so believe in that.
And just put out there, I'm a real believer in this thing of like, you just project what you want into the universe, and it might not happen tomorrow. It might take 20 years.
Oof.
But if you keep focused on that and you keep going and you keep optimistic that you're going to get there, ultimately something will come from that. Mm-hmm. Might not be exactly what you wanted, but actually it's often what you need.
What you need.
Right, not what you want, but what you need.
Exactly.
Oh shit, that is everything. That is actually what I learned in the last few years. It's like, it's not about what you want, it's about what you need, and that's what the universe gives you, which is why it takes a little minute.
Yeah. When I went through my divorce, a friend of my mother's, who's quite spiritually inclined, was like, you should write a list of every single thing that you want in a partner, and then you should write it on a piece of paper, and then you should set it alight and scatter the ashes. And you've got the water, air, wind and fire or something, all of the elements. And I did it, but I forgot to put in key details like age. And basically I ended up with someone who met the requirements, but not the ones that I hadn't thought about. So he was much younger than I was, and that's the relationship that broke up. Then I was like, I'm not going to make that mistake again. Wrote a list of such specific detail, like everything, just covered as a sheet of A4 with everything I absolutely wanted. Did the same thing, set it alight. I was in LA at the time. I can remember where I was when I scattered it into the air. And then I met Justin. I'm not kidding you. I met Justin like 6 months later. And I kept a photo of that list on my phone. And I've subsequently showed it to you. And he genuinely meets every single criteria.
Every single very specific criteria.
But I was very specific. I was like, no drug dealers. No philanderers. No time wasters.
I was too vague. Interesting. So it's like, be specific.
Yes.
About what you want. Don't you feel like, I'd like love.
Can I ask you a question, Justin? Because you asked me what family meant to me.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested what family means to you.
Well, family means my children and you and my mother. And
your sister.
My sister.
Remember her?
My sister, God love her. I don't have like a massive definition of it. It's the traditional definition, I think, of family.
Okay, fine.
Mm-hmm. And I don't have that many friends and things. But that's been the joy about meeting you. One of the amazing things about meeting you is just the people that we have now in our lives, like you guys, and meeting people who are just genuinely fascinating people with amazing stories and have done amazing things in their lives. And that's just been an absolute joy.
So I want to ask about fanciness. And when I say fanciness, because different people have an idea about what makes them feel fancy or feel dressed up or relaxed or happy in your clothes. Do you like getting fancy, Elizabeth? You're quite fancy.
You are fancy.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, come now. That dress at your book launch.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
But that dress was that was an accident. I can tell you a whole story about that dress if you want. But basically, I got sent it by mistake. And and I was like, oh, I'll just try it on anyway, because it looks really fancy. It's this like velvet, floor length.
Who was it?
Like a floor length train, but the front bit was shorter. And it was intended for Dolly Alderton, who's a really good friend of mine. They meant to send it to her, but they got their tall London author podcasters mixed up.
Oh, wow.
And they sent it to me instead. And she needed it for an event that
Some
night.
Some fancy white
I couriered it over. It didn't quite fit the bill for her. So she couriered it back to me and I ended up wearing it. So
I cost a lot. Just got to a point in my life where I will spend more money because I never thought I deserved it.
Right.
It's like houses as well. I remember we had this conversation where you recently moved. It's almost like you've never felt you deserved more than two rooms.
Or just that I was allowed.
Yeah. Or that you could.
But I could. When my accountant said to me, you know, you should just rent a house. I was like, really?
Yeah.
And I said, I can do that. He said, yeah, you can do that because at the moment you've got five storage units.
I know.
And it's costing you a lot.
I was like, move into the storage unit.
I was like, I need another storage unit. And he went, please don't get another storage unit. Just rent a house. Because I've got so many clothes because of work.
Yeah.
And I'm just not used to it. And I'm also not used to like being able to have things. It's a mindset, that I'm allowed to have things.
Hmm. It's really interesting watching Mum have things and allow herself to have things, whether that be a nice rug or a big house. Especially because we work really hard, all the hours God sends us, any hour God sends us. And now she's got her favourite new dress shop on Wanstead High Street.
Oh. They're very good. But do you know what that's a bit about as well? It's a bit about not being a size 12, 10 or 12 person. Yeah. And all those like really high fashion places. They don't make clothes in my size. So I never felt like comfortable to walk in. I remember our friend Hosh, who comes from a very wealthy family, took me to this thing. Was it Gucci?
Yes.
I don't know where it was. It was Gucci. And they were like, do you want something? And I was like, no, I'm not. That is like a whole pit of fucking rubble getting undressed in Gucci. No, thank you. So I got a handbag.
Which is still in the bag upstairs.
Because it's a stupid clutch bag. I don't like it. I'm going to sell it.
We've been saying that for 7 years.
Oh, 7 years. But I had a similar thing recently. We went on holiday a few weeks ago and I was just wearing this kind of misshapen bikini. And I was like, why? I'm 44 and like you, I work really hard. I'm like, why am I working hard if I'm not spending money on something that's going to make me feel better when I'm on the beach? So suddenly I went through this whole like, no, I'm going to get something nice for myself.
Can I really not have a new cosy? Like,
exactly.
Thank you so much for coming. Yes. Justin, I can't tell you how happy I am. I feel kind of relieved.
I've loved it. And it's so lovely to meet you.
It really is. Justin, so nice.
Can we do lots more?
Yes, definitely. Come over to ours. And
yes.
I'll cook.
And what do you cook?
And meet Huxley.
This is a big conversation.
I can cook. If you came over, I'd probably cook Italian.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's what my grandmother
would do. Some of the broccoli, that's like my favourite. Yeah. In brodo.
Tortellini in brodo is his signature dish.
I'll make you that.
See you soon. Yeah. Cheers. Yeah. Cheers. Yeah.
Thank you.
Tortellini
in brodo coming so much.
Didn't she do well? What a lovely dude.
Yeah.
One of the most like emotionally intelligent people you'll meet,
yes,
isn't he? I love the way he talks about the world and life and their relationship.
There's a lot of communication in their relationship.
They're kind of very grown up, aren't they? And he's very interesting.
Totally. But then I thought, are we getting something different from Elizabeth because she's with him? And I absolutely think we were.
Mm.
As she said, she's just really safe with him.
Yeah, loved.
But loved, yes.
They're loved.
She moved like she was loved.
Yeah.
And
well, cheers to that.
smacked another dinner party. I like that our table is doing what it's always done.
Yeah, that was really nice when you talked about that, because it just felt really... I mean, I know we're at home, but just because you're at home doesn't mean you feel homely mm-hmm. with the people that you're having dinner with. And it just felt really homely, really lovely. And I feel like I'm going to think about, go to bed thinking about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I feel like I learned a lot today. Yeah.
You're going to make a list?
Yeah.
Oh, you better believe it.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.